track, but the Benz is hard to beat. So hey, if you want, you can ride with me, ride, ride with me.
Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great day to get some stuff done in and around your house, primarily inside. It's just a little bit of a cool temperatures out there. Fall. It's fall. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. It's here. I love it. What is this? Long sleeve and shorts. I love this kind of weather. It's about time.
Your uniform.
Yeah, that's my work uniform.
Are you ready for it?
I am. Yeah. And I'm embracing it as well because the cooler temperatures, gosh, they are just so welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And even the rain, we needed some rain.
It was nice. Nothing wrong with a little shower here and there.
No, we needed it. It was a little dry, as a matter of fact. And given that with the rain, my grass is just taking off.
Mm.
I need to get out there and mow it. Yeah. And obviously, I haven't had a chance the last few days. We've had these off and on showers.
Right.
And it's just staring me in the face.
It's
taunting me. But nonetheless, my lawn is just a beautiful green color. I just need to get out there and mow it.
Yeah.
And it's looking just, it's thick. It's unbelievable how much it has greened up, how thick it has gotten just recently.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say thank you to the Fertilume 3-Step Program.
We're going to talk a little bit more about that because we're right in that window of opportunity for you to get an application down, plus to sow some seed, and we've got a lot of talk about that. We have a special guest, too, coming in today. And I just noticed that they took the rain out of the forecast from, I guess apparently it moved through last night a little quicker than they thought it was going to. So today will be mostly cloudy, but no real precipitation in the forecast, and a high of 68. Gets to be a little bit of a warm-up for next week, starting on Sunday, high of 71, then 73, and then on Wednesday, it gets back up to around 80 or 82, lots of sunshine and no showers in the forecast.
You can't ask for a better forecast than that, Ernie, because just with these given temperatures that we've been just recently experiencing, I want you to most certainly go out, take advantage of it. And if you've yet to put down your first step for the fall application of the Fertilume 3-Step Program, get out to your local nurseries and garden centers and pick up your product and get it down. Take advantage of these nice, cool temperatures. And it's a known fact. University studies have indicated the two fall fertilizations are definitely the most important fertilizations that you can give your lawn during any course of the season because of this. You know, as you know, the season cools, as we're starting to experience those cooler temperatures, Ernie, you know, our grasses start to take off just like they do early spring. So we have cool season grasses here in our area. And so as they put on that nice new lush growth, what's happening is the root system of our turf is starting to really develop and take off, get stronger, starts building up those energy reserves for the following season, all those sugars and carbohydrates. It just makes for a better turf, a healthier turf. It really helps your turf get along through the winter months. And then it's a proven fact as well that your lawn will green up quicker in the spring than those that have not been fertilized. It's that important.
Tony, we have Ruth on the line from Indiana. And Ruth, I apologize. I couldn't quite understand what your question was about. White something? Are you there, Ruth? Well, where did she go?
Well, if we lost her for whatever reason, feel free to give us a call back. And,
Hello?
Hello, Ruth. Oh, there you are.
Yes. Yes, I didn't hear you say hello.
Oh, that's okay.
I have white flies that are just driving me nuts outside on my zinnias.
Oh, and, white fly.
Yeah, and we've tried. They gave us some sprays from the garden centers. We've tried three different ones, and we are still ate up with white flies. What do I do?
Mm. At this
Is
point,
there something natural that I can do with spices or something? Or
oh, that I don't know. And Ruth, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you. I'm in the same boat.
Uh-oh.
We've had a little bit of white fly activity on some of our annuals this year, and you know, I don't know if that's coincidental or you know, or what, because typically I haven't seen really white fly issues in some time. They can be really pesky, too, when you're out there, and you just as soon as you touch that foliage or you water those plants, it's like call the air traffic controllers because there's so much white fly activity. It's comical. But what have you tried thus far?
Oh, they're out in the garage. I don't know the names of them. They were given to us from the farm and garden places. We tried one down at McCabe's. We tried one over at Three Oaks or Five Oaks in Batesville. And there was another one. I'm trying to remember some of the names of them.
Right.
Well, they're out in the garage and I'm in the house. But anyway, I was just wondering if there's something you knew that we could use or something.
Well, if you want to use something kind of as a first line of defense, something that's a little safe and not as strong as some of the other products that are out there on the shelf, a lot of people will first attack those kind of issues with a soapy dishwashing kind of solution. Mm-hmm. There's insecticidal soaps that you can purchase from local garden centers and nurseries, or you can make up your own concoction with a little bit of dishwashing detergent and water.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, if the infestation's really it's advanced or it's been you know a problem for some time, that's really not that effective, unfortunately. Then you got to go to guns, so to speak, and use some other products.
I thought about just going ahead and cutting my zinnias down because they are end of season, you know what
right.
I mean? And then I thought, well, maybe I could just treat the dirt or something because they're going to be somewhere. I mean, they're coming from somewhere, but I can't figure out.
Yeah, well, they hang out underneath the foliage on the bottom side of the leaves.
Okay.
That's where the party is. And a lot of times, that is why it's difficult to control them, because when we're spraying products, we're spraying on top of the leaf, so that's somewhat, it's protecting them.
Right.
You know, it's just like it's an umbrella for those guys. So trying to get up underneath the foliage is where you're most effective. And, you know, there's a product, there's a 3-in-1 product from Bayer that I like. It's it kills on contact, and it also works and serves as a systemic. It gets into the plant and protects it for 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very effective as well. But once you get that infestation, there's a lot of egg laying that takes place underneath the foliage.
Yeah, I've already seen some of the egg pouches and
mm-hmm.
stuff. Oh, boy, here we go.
Yeah, so everything that you have there that's been, you know, plaguing you plant-wise, discard it, get rid of it. You don't want that around, and just go ahead and change out those containers and get ready for the fall season.
Okay.
But it's and try some of the systemic drenches too. Those work as well. So sometimes it's a combination of things. Malathion's really good, and that's going to guns.
What was that one?
Malathion.
Okay. Malathion, okay.
But what's the key is trying to spray up underneath the foliage. That's okay. That's where you you had the you're most effective.
And all right. Let
Thank
us know
you
how
so
it
very
works
much.
Out.
Y'all have a great day.
You're
you
welcome,
too,
Ruth.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Bob on the line who got a question about when's the best time to aerate his lawn. Good morning, Bob. Thanks for calling and thanks for hanging on.
Morning, Bob.
Morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Pretty good.
Good.
How big of a lawn do you have?
Just got a question. When's the best time to aerate the lawns?
I think the month of October is the ideal month throughout the course of the year.
Okay.
Any time this month. And the real key to aeration, too, is making sure the lawn is just adequately moist enough to when you run the aerator over it and use the one that pulls the plugs. There's two different types. There's one that just puts the holes in the lawn without pulling plugs. You want a core aerator. And get a couple of guys in the neighborhood, chip in and rent one, and just do your lawns one day and then take it back in.
Okay. Okay. Will do.
Aeration is so important for a lawn, and it's just getting oxygen to that top layer of the soil. It's a huge benefit. It really allows your lawn to breathe. And try and do that annually or at least every 2 years. I try to do it at least every 2 years. But maybe I should do it every year. But there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
I wish more people would aerate.
Okay. Okay. So the middle of...
Yeah, any time this month.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
How is the overall health of your lawn right now? Is it pretty nice?
Pretty good.
Yeah. And just leave those little plugs on the top because they'll break down, and it's an added value. What you're doing as well, you're displacing all the microbial activity throughout the top surface of the lawn, so that's very beneficial.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, you too.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've got a lot of ground to cover today, but we need to pause right now. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Christy on the line who's got a comment about the aeration of the lawn. Christy, do you do that yourself or no?
I personally do not do it for myself, but my husband does it for our yard.
All right.
My husband is a certified arborist for a tree company called Certified Tree Care, from Dave Stain Certified Tree Care.
Oh,
and they do an amazing job with aeration. If anybody didn't want to do it themselves, they could always hire one of the certified arborists from Certified Tree Care.
I didn't realize that was a part of their service, or is this just a...
Yeah, it's an added element, yeah. Most definitely.
They do lots of stuff just besides tree removal.
So do you, are they based in Northern Kentucky, in Ohio, somewhere? Apparently you're in the listening area.
Their home location is based right outside of Oakleaf, but they travel within the whole northern, they'll travel into Kentucky, and they'll travel into northern and southern Ohio.
I gotcha.
Now, what is the name of the company? I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Certified Tree Care.
Certified Tree Care. Okay.
All right.
All right, we appreciate the information.
I thought if he doesn't want to do it himself, just hire a certified arborist.
I got you.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Bye-bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it's fall. It was nice to see the temperatures finally start to dip just a little bit. You know, I like it. And I know that all the allergy sufferers like myself are hoping for that quick, early frost snap just to kill everything.
Snap.
And then back to a fall, where we have an Indian summer.
You know, did I understand that I heard somebody talking about how bad ragweed is this year?
Oh, yeah, it's been ugly.
Yeah, I don't know. Something's been troubling me, and it's like just sinus drainage. It's just those allergies or my eyes itch. And I don't know if you've noticed or not, I got a pair of new glasses, so I'm trying to give my eyes a break from contacts. And I've just had this redness in my eyes for some time, about the last month or so.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's contact related or if it's allergy related, but I'm like you. I'm hoping for that hard freeze.
Sure.
Not quite yet. Maybe I should back off of that statement. But just to knock some of that stuff out, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's this time of year. I love it. The temperatures start to dip down. It's nice and cool. It's crisp in the mornings when you get up. And
mm-hmm.
I like to go in the back room, sip on a cup of coffee, read a book. And it's kind of chilly, you know. Yeah. It's just right. And as we approach the fall season, well, we're in the season, so it's time to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. And as a matter of fact, I think Burger Farms is kicking off their big pumpkin fest this weekend.
Oh, that's right. They are.
So maybe we'll try and get a hold of Bart rolling over at Burger and see what's going on sometime this morning. But this is the perfect time of year. I love the fall season. It's my favorite time of the year. I just think about all the things that you can do when it comes to decorating your containers, your window boxes, and all that good stuff, or even your landscape beds. You know, mum is the word still.
Uh-huh.
Mums are starting to show a little bit more color than they were in the past couple of weeks, so they're cracking. You're getting an opportunity when you're out at your local garden centers and nurseries to see what those colors are, so you don't have to lift up the pot and look for that tag. You know, we try and keep them in groups and so forth at the garden center. But mums are coming on. They're a little late this year, and that's because of the warmer temperatures that we were experiencing. But it's just all that good stuff. It's the fall magic.
Mm. You know, it's one of my favorite, too, is the little fall decorations are starting to pop up. The gourds and the pumpkins, the hay bales, and it's really nice to see. And it does add color to your landscape, too.
It really does. You know, the corn stalks, do you still call those fodder? You ever you have fodder for sale?
What? No, but when you leave, we're going to talk about you.
Yeah, we're going to talk about you. But the corn stalks, you know, the Indian corn, too. I really like the Indian corn, all those various colors and so forth.
Yeah.
Just nice decorations. My dad does these really nice fall Indian corn decorations for the front door. He'll spruce up like 3 ears of corn with some stuff and a nice bow. And it's just a wonderful decoration to put on the door. It's real easy. It's real simple. And most homeowners can do that as well. But it's just, it's getting those decorations out there. The straw bales, like you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And the gourds. The gourds are so cool this year. The gnarly look. I was trying to write down some notations the other day from someone that we buy our gourds from, and I like the ones that have all the warts on them.
Yeah.
Or the different colors.
The uglier, the better.
Uh-huh. And what else really spruces up things, especially window boxes, the pie pumpkins, the winged, you know, bat gourds, the small munchkin pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just put those little groupings in your window boxes or even in some of your containers. It just makes things pop.
Yeah. Have you had your first cup of pumpkin spice latte yet?
Oh, come on, Ernie. You know me. Ernie, I'm not a latte kind of guy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't want to burst your bubble.
No, I know you drink your coffee black. And
that's right.
I just thought you'd get a kick out of that.
I always get a kick out of that. And I am in no way, shape, or form willing to lose my man card over a cup of latte. My wife likes lattes. I don't.
Yep. There's been pumpkin spice everything at the radio station all week long.
Yeah.
Coming into October, it is in full force. We've been talking already about some fall decorations, mums, lawn, and we're also going to talk a little bit about what the weather might be doing to your plants, and no reason to panic just yet. When we come back, we'll get you caught up on what you should be doing for your landscape plants. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it was good to see that maybe they've taken the biggest percentage of the precipitation out of the forecast today, but still going to be cool. And there may be a shot at a shower or two. But we've had a couple of comments about aerating your lawn and get that Fertiloom step down. And, you know, as Tony mentioned early in the program, kind of on that cusp about whether or not you're going to reseed, if you're going to reseed, when to do it.
Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully most people who are working on renovating their lawn or having to reseed or repair some areas and so forth, that they've already done that.
Uh-huh.
Now, the problem starts to come into play here when we get into the very beginning of October. You know, think about this. On average, it takes around 14 days for seed to germinate. Now, with the exception of, you know, some of the ryes and so forth, they germinate a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start projecting out down the road 14 days, that puts us into the middle of the month, you know. So the longer you start pushing things back, we start running into that issue where as the seed starts to germinate and it's real small and tender and you get a hard freeze or a couple of those hard frost, that's not good. That kind of knocks things back. So hopefully try and get those, you know, if you still want to sow seed, I'm confident you can still do it. Next week's temperatures are still very favorable. And, you know, it's some of the, it's one of those things. I've had success in October, which most people do. But just understand what could occur, what could happen.
Right. So with the given the question this morning about aerating your lawn,
yeah,
where would you set that schedule up? Aerate first, then seed, or seed and then aerate? And how would you handle that?
Well, I would aerate first for this reason and this reason only, is because think about it, if you sow grass seed and then you come back in after you sow grass seed and you aerate the lawn, what are you doing? You're displacing everything that you had sown.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking on it. You're tearing it up. So you can start moving seed around by just stepping on it or the machine as it goes through the turf.
Gotcha.
So I would rather you aerate first, then reseed.
And how much time do you wait between aerating and...
Go at it. Go right after it.
Really?
My neighbor across the street did this about 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, he stopped down a store, purchased a 50-pound bag of seed. His lawn is coming in, and it's beautiful.
Wow.
It really is. So that's the importance of trying to be ready to do that at the beginning of September,
mm-hmm.
because that's ideal. And now that it's up and it's kind of working its way and it's developing and growing and getting taller, you know, he'll be able to mow it two or three times this month, and it makes it stronger and it sets it up and it hardens it off going into the winter months.
And when you mow a new lawn, it's important to mulch. Is that correct?
To mulch
it up? Yep.
Well, yeah, always use your, you know, set your mower to the mulching, you know, setting. You know, you're getting an added benefit from that, you know, as those clippings fall back to the soil surface. It's serving, you know, it's giving us some an element of nitrogen.
Right. Okay.
So, absolutely. And mow tall still. I usually leave my mower on the second to the highest setting.
Yep. That's
don't. Don't start mowing short. I've already had people coming into the garden center and saying, yeah, I've already started to lower my mower deck.
Don't do it.
Don't do that. Not at all. Don't do that. That's not what you want to do. The last time you mow is when you want to lower your deck one notch and then put everything away for the winter.
Clean it all.
Yeah.
Then put it away.
And, you know, this is a good time of year as well to... get out into the landscape beds and your perennial beds, even the annual beds. I can see where my annuals are starting to, you know, they're not at their peak. However, those on the deck and the container still are, but some of those in the landscape, you know, they're starting to look a little, I need to be reworked kind of look.
Yeah.
So start discarding things, you know, clean some things up. Some of your perennials, if they need to be pruned back, go ahead and start doing some of that stuff. You know, just start tidying up the bed. And don't try and do it all at once. Just do it in stages. You know, work on the front or work on the side. When you work on it in stages, it doesn't make it one huge project and you have to get it all done in one day.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it manageable. And I even think more so enjoyable.
Right.
You know, when you feel like you have to do something and you're rushing to get it all done today, it's a task. You know, it's like... somebody's evaluating you on your job performance.
Gotcha.
Just take your time.
Yep. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Also want to start thinking about some of those bulbs, and we're going to talk about those when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause. We'll be back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot to talk about today. Got a couple of guests coming in. And one of the things we're going to be talking about later on, too, is the basement doctor is going to be joining us. And with that rain, some people may have been concerned about getting a little water in the basement. We got some solutions for you. But also fall bulbs. Time to start thinking about those.
And, absolutely.
We had a great tip last week about the garlic bulbs. And that whole from garden to table thing is very healthy for you. It's great for you. It's a lot of fun. Great chance to talk and teach with the children. But it's also something that reminds us about the fall bulbs. What do you want to put in? When to do it?
oh, now's the time to do it. Uh-huh. You know, anytime during the month of October, even in, going into November. But I want to point this out as well. If you're picking up fall bulbs for those spring blooms, don't forget to plant them. Don't leave them in the garage.
Yeah.
Don't leave them in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead and get those guys in the ground. The sooner you do that, the better. Things get rooted in so well. And then next spring, you know, after we go through those long winter doldrum months,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you start seeing things popping up out of the ground and giving us a burst of color early in the spring, it's those fall bulbs. And well worth the anticipation, the waiting period of just what they give us in the spring. And,
mm-hmm.
and we know when we see spring bulbs, you know, starting to come up, and like the daffodils, the tulips, we know that spring's right there knocking on our door.
Yeah, it's and just that burst of color you need.
Just enough. You know, the crocus, just all that good stuff, the hyacinths. You know, what a wonderful fragrance from the hyacinths. But Jerome Mingfeld will be joining us here around the 7 o'clock hour to talk about bulbs. Jerome is from the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
and he's been in here with us before in the past. We've talked about different things when it comes to fall bulbs and even some of the summer bulbs. And a wealth of knowledge. And if you have any questions, feel free to call, because there's all those little issues that sometimes we have with bulbs. For example, what happens when we see our daffodils come up, but we don't get any blooms?
Right.
That's what we call when they come up blind. Number of things can be happening when that happens or occurs. And keep that in mind. We'll talk more about that and what you need to do and think about in a 7 o'clock hour.
Mm-hmm.
But Jerome has so much experience. You know, he grew up on the farms, the bulb farms, as a youngster. And when he was going to college, you know, he worked on the bulb farms. He has so much information, a lot of valuable information. And there are times when, you know, I don't know everything about every bulb. I'll give Jerome a call or I'll send him a text. And, you know, he always gets right back with us. And just a wealth of knowledge. We're also going to talk about some things that you need to know and be aware of for those who plant the summer bulbs. I'm talking about some of the lilies, you know, the cannas that you like and yep. talk about so often.
Mm-hmm.
The caladiums or some of the calicaceas and alocaceas, all those good summer bulbs. What do we need to do when we lift those and how do we store those? Very, very important. And a lot of times, Ernie, I have a neighbor down the street that has the most beautiful elephant ears, and he always leaves them out, and they, you know, he'll lose them. And the next year, what's he doing? He's planting another one.
Oh,
bring those in and store them, and they get larger over time. So we're going to talk about, you know, the proper way to store bulbs as well.
I thought you were going to say, and it just is amazing how they come back and look beautiful every year, but they don't.
No.
Then he goes out and buys new ones.
Right.
And we don't want you to do that. We want you to save some of your money. We've got those answers coming up in just about 30 minutes. And one of the things, too, that we were talking about how the weather is going to affect your lawn this fall and then how it's going to affect next year. And that's why we're trying to remind you about the Fertilum three-step program, when to get it down, how much time you have left on the to seed your lawn and make it beautiful for next year.
Well, most definitely. And you know, the thing of it is, if you've yet to put down your first fall application, it's not a big deal. You could still do it in October and then put that second fall application down in November.
Mm-hmm.
What's really important is that you have a 6-week interval between those two applications.
Gotcha.
So as long as you can get that 6-week interval in there, everything is all and well. And it's so important. It really is. I don't care what you do the rest of the year. The two fall fertilizations they're the most crucial.
Right.
And it's the best time. It is the best time to get into the Fertilum three-step program. And if you've yet to do it, or you're a little apprehensive, or you need a little bit more information, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Those of us who are Fertilum dealers, just check it out. Ask us the questions that you have or that you want to pose. And if you do not have a fertilizer spreader, we're willing to loan you one.
Mm-hmm.
You have to bring it back, but we're willing to loan you one. And it makes a huge difference. And it's easy to do, and you don't always necessarily have to hire somebody to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're busy with work and all that stuff and the kids, certainly look for somebody to do it. There's nothing wrong with hiring somebody to do it. But if you want to be one of those do-it-yourselfers, certainly take it upon yourself to do it, and we're willing to loan you a spreader.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about your fall decor and decorations And, of course, always visit your local home and garden center. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And the fall has arrived, and all your fall decorations are really starting to look nice. The sun's going down earlier and coming up. Or I'm sorry, yeah, going down earlier. Coming up later.
You know. Spit that out. Get that out, Ernie.
And it's one of those things where we talked about it for weeks, trying to get everyone ready, and now it's here. And visit your local home and garden center and check out some of the beautiful fall decorations that are out there.
Absolutely. And remember, you know, stay local. Support your local businesses. I can't say that enough. You know, every time you shop local and you stay local, on average, 67 cents of every dollar that you spend stays right here in the local community. And it's important. You know, the local businesses, they are the cornerstones of our community. They really are. So be conscientious of that and always support your local businesses. And we were talking about the Fertilum three-step program and lawn renovation somewhat, and getting that fertilization down. The two fertilizations during the fall season are the most important. I don't care what you do. It's the best time to get into the Fertilum three-step program. We say that often. In addition to that, I also want to kind of step aside, and if you're really not into the traditional way of fertilizing your lawn, that's perfectly okay, because there's a lot of people that want to take different approaches to the organic approach, which is, you know, using things that are pet safe or friendly for pets and kids on the lawn. And you certainly have a couple of options. One is Milorganite. We talk about Milorganite often, and we've had interviews in the past with Melinda Myers. Uh-huh. She is the spokesperson for Milorganite, a wonderful product. It contains iron, and it's non-burning. As she always says, they call it, it's goof-proof. So you have that as an option. So look for Milorganite at your local garden centers and nurseries. It's a wonderful alternative to using the traditional approach if you're wanting to go that route. In addition to that, secondly, Espoma. Yeah, they do a really good program for lawns that is an organic approach. And just recently, I've had some calls for the organic lawn food, their fall winterizer from Espoma. And I was just talking to Bart Rowland from Burger Farm the other day. I know that they carry some of these products. I have some, but it's the Espoma Organic Lawn Program. It's a great program. However, a lot of people, you know, they don't know much about it. Maybe we should make them more aware of. Mm-hmm. There's other alternatives and safe ways to fertilize your lawn if, in fact, you have pets and kids that are always outside. So you have those two options. And I know Bart over at Burger Farm, they have the fall winterizer in from Espoma, so you can certainly stop over there and pick it up. We're going to order some ourselves just to have a little bit on hand. But those are the two alternatives to the traditional way how we fertilize our lawns. So look for Milorganite at your local garden centers and nurseries, and look for the Espoma lawn program from your local garden centers and nurseries.
Just go in and ask, and you'll get all the best advice you'll ever need.
And if we don't have it, we can certainly get it for you just in a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But again, I just want to put some emphasis on, these are the kind of products, they're good products, but they sit on the store shelves for a long period of time because a lot of people aren't gravitating towards that approach. Mm-hmm. But we can certainly get those products in your hands.
Right.
So visit your local garden centers and nurseries and get these products if, in fact, you want to take that approach.
Today would be a perfect day to that.
It's a perfect day for that, most definitely. And, you know, you were talking about some of the fall decor and decorations, mm-hmm. and right now, I'm telling you, I just love peering down and staring at the ornamental peppers that are in the garden center. They're all different. They're all unique. You know, a lot of the celosias have really gained ground in past years. Orange Twister is one. Another one is called Dragon's Breath. It's got this beautiful red foliage. So these are things that you need to start honing in on and getting ready to change out some of those old, tired, worn-out containers and pots and window boxes. You know, take advantage of the nice weather we're starting to have. It's pleasant just to get out there and work in the yard and do some of those things without sweating up a storm and having to change a shirt out or go in and take a shower and come back out and pick up where you left off. And the moms, too. The moms are really looking awesome. And the beauty of the moms is this, that most of the garden centers, we all carry various sizes. And when we talk about various sizes, we're talking about the standard 8-inch mom pan, which most of us carry and most of us are most familiar with. But also, you can buy those in a 6-inch pot. And you can also buy those in a 4-inch pot. And the beauty of those various size pots allows us the flexibility to work those mums into different size containers. So it, just to give you an example, it's not easy to put an 8-inch mum pan or an 8-inch mum into like a 6-foot window or a 6-inch window box. And I'm talking about the depth from front to back. So we have these various sizes that allows you to use various things according to their heights. And it makes things look better proportionately, I should say. Is that right, Ernie? Help me out with some of those
big words.
It's not a really big word. It's just using the right word. You've been around us long enough. I can butcher the English language, and my wife is always correcting me. So you think that I would get better. However, things are more proportionate in size when you're using these various sizes that are available when it comes to mums. Right. Also, the peppers as well, the ornamental cabbage and kale. Keep this in mind. The cooler that the temperatures become, the more vibrant these colors are with the ornamental cabbages and kales. And also, don't forget about the ornamental mustards. Those are just as neat and cool to incorporate into some of your plantings as well. So there's a lot of neat things out there. Take advantage of it.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, we have Dan on the line who had a question for you about his lawn. Hi, Dan. Thanks for hanging on.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
Tony, I sent you an email earlier the week. You couldn't get my pictures. I didn't know if you got my second email to a Dropbox link that had my pictures in it. To reference my lawn, man, we seeded in May, and it's got this alien weed-looking grass. I want to say it's hay grass, but I can't tell.
Mm-hmm. Is it nutsedge? No.
One more time.
I haven't been in the email in recent days, so I apologize for that, but I'll look again. I do remember when you did send some photographs. I was trying to click on those links and I wasn't getting anything. But Dan, look at that. But let's go back to what you've done thus far. You said back in May you were working on the lawn, and take me through the steps or the processes that you had incorporated.
Well, we moved into a new subdivision out in Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And they seeded the back, sawed at the front.
Right.
And the back, it just has this terrible grass.
Mm-hmm.
I went when we had a lot of rain and a lot of snow throughout that time period before they seeded.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of issues in the backyard with this, just seed not taking.
Okay.
Or the birds taking it when they could.
Okay.
I obviously put some more seed down, and I put high quality seed down. I didn't, buy cheap stuff at the your local gas station or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
But and I also laid down Fertilim starter lawn same time.
Okay.
And I started seeing some growth, and everything started to look okay.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden my entire yard is just covered in these god awful alien looking weeds.
Okay.
I don't know what the heck they are. I think it's from the hay. I think when they seeded the lawn with the hay, they took hay that wasn't unseeded or not ready to use for lawns yet.
Right. Yeah, you can get a little bit of you can have a little bit of issues with some of the straw and so forth that's being used. But I'm not going to blame it totally on that, because I want to ask you another question, and that is, did they bring soil in and from somewhere outside and kind of start from that standpoint? Did they bring in like a layer of topsoil, 3, 4, 6 inches?
I want to say they did.
Okay.
Before they started to...
before they had sown the seed.
Yeah, before they started to mess with the whole yard, they leveled everything out. And
perfect.
Then, I wouldn't doubt that they added more topsoil.
Well, that's essential, and that's really important that you do. But in addition to that, on that same note, What's really important, too, is to know where that topsoil is coming from. And I'm going to step out and say a lot of the weed issues that you're seeing is a result of that topsoil that was brought in. Now, it has really nothing to do with the seed that you had sown for your turf, and very little, as a matter of fact, with the straw or whatever it is that you put down. That comes into play, don't get me wrong. But a lot of times when we get, like, topsoil from various places and it's inexpensive and all that other good stuff, it's just excavated topsoil from other places that has been shredded, and a lot of weed seed that's still in that topsoil has never seen the light of day. So now we're introducing it to our turf, our lawns, you know, around the house when we excavate and grade everything out. That stuff comes to light. I've done this before. I bought some topsoil locally. And I was a youngster, you know, new homeowner, and I was filling in with a sinkhole. And I had more weeds than I did grass.
Right.
You know, and I just kind of, you know, I'm like, you know, I know better. And that was it. That was the end of that. So I started going to better places that carry quality topsoil. Hafner's. We talk about Hafner's topsoil all the time. They have various grades of topsoil. That's where I would start, Hafner's and Sons. And, you know, getting a good topsoil is so important. But going back to your issues now, I don't know until I see the photographs that you sent me what we're looking at. But if you have a lot of broadleaf weeds in there and a bunch of crap, we're going to need to really regroup, drop back, and start over. And we need to kill everything.
Right. I mean, the entire backyard is covered in these. It's just really hard. It would grass before it grows its stem, and then once it hits the stem, it's, you know, has a little petals on top, where mm-hmm. I guess it spreads.
Yeah,
but it's all over the yard.
Yeah, you probably have a combination of things. What it sounds like, and because of that, and I look at it like this: if you think you have 60% weeds and 40% turf, I'm doing a total renovation. You know, if you have more turf than weeds, then I'm going to stick with the turf, try and make it stronger, and add grass seed, you know, where I'm able to add it and get that turf established. The front looks good, doesn't it?
The front looks awesome.
Perfect. But, you know, how large of a space is your backyard, square footage-wise?
It's I'd say your medium yard.
Okay. Flat?
I'm going to say about 78 total square feet back-to-back.
Yeah, is it flat?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that makes it even better. What I would do, is it sparse, too, in areas?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Is it sparse in areas? Can you still see some soil in various spots?
Yeah, we still have, there's some soil throughout that you can see, you know, there's mud, actually.
Right, right. What I would do, I would maybe rent a seed slicer and go in there and just sow some seed and tear it up a little bit. Some of the weeds that you probably see in there, for example, if you have crabgrass, it's going to die out.
Right.
So therefore, only things that, you know, drop seed you'll see next year. I would see how it responds in the spring, and then how it responds in the spring would dictate what I do.
And that was called a seed slicer?
Yeah, just tear it up. Yeah.
Okay.
Or, you know, here's the dilemma. If you start to kill things, if you're using a selective herbicide, you got to wait 14 days before you can sow seed. And then when you sow seed after that 14-day period, it takes an average of 14 days for the seed to germinate. So that puts you 28 days out. That's out of the question. We're pushing the envelope. That puts us into November. That's not the ideal time to do it. If you were using Kills-All or Roundup, you could kill whatever and then sow seed in 7 days. So that makes that window of opportunity a little better. At this point in time, I would just try and get some seed started and see what happens. Take my chances. You know, we're in the early part of October. I will look at your email. I will definitely put a contact number there for me to call you.
Yeah, I did.
And we'll go back over it.
Okay.
And just take that approach, and we'll catch up with that, and we'll take care of what we need to next year, and we'll get that lawn back into shape.
Cool beans, man. Thank you very much.
All right,
man.
You're welcome. Take care, Dan.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we're going to be talking about bulbs coming up here in just a few minutes. We've got an expert coming in. And great call from Dan about lawns. And it's just really frustrating when you have something like that. Just
it is.
You have to battle all the time.
It is. And I swear to you, I hear people all the time, they'll come into the garden center, Ernie. It's like, you know, I bought this seed at such and such a place and it's full of weeds. No, it's not. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to defend everybody selling seed for the most part. What's really important, and we talked about this when Mike Clare was visiting with us from the Boone County Extension Office. Every bag of seed that we sell comes with a tag, and it talks about the purity of the seed, what's all in that seed, its germination ratio, all that good stuff. Look for that tag. It tells you. A lot of times when you're buying inexpensive seed, that's what you're buying. And a lot of times, Mike wasn't kidding. It might be dirt from this floor when they sweep it up. It's all that inert whatever that's in those bags. The problem's not really with the seed most of the time. It's the soil that you buy that you fill in with. Mm-hmm. And you go out and you buy that stuff at 79 cents a bag or 99 cents a bag. I guarantee you're going to spend 99 cents times 10 to get something to kill what comes up in that. You really will. And I know we're laughing about it a little bit, but I can't say that enough. That's the problem. You know, think about your time. Think about all the efforts. Think about your dollars. You know, when you're buying that stuff and you're being cost conscientious and you're going for that low dollar item, it usually comes back and bites you in the rear.
Right.
Because you got enough time to come back and make that purchase a second time, your time and effort, and you could be hanging out at one of the football games or watching TV with some of your buddies, college football on Saturdays, but you're back out in the yard.
Yeah, both of our parents from that era have always told us, well, you know, he's got time to do it right the second time. So,
and our buddies at Bud Herbert Motors say it all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And speaking of Bud Herbert Motors, if you need to get out there and pick up a new leaf blower for this fall or one of those leaf vacs, do it because I love mine.
Yeah.
I love the still. When I go in there, I'm like a kid in a candy store.
You are.
I could just, there's other things in there I want to purchase that I perhaps do not even need. That's a bad addiction. That's like my wife with shoes, I guess, you know, or wives that like purses and all that good stuff. It's a little different, though. We can do it, but they can't, right? But again, you know, we're talking a little bit about lawn renovation and lawn fertilization and take advantage of the season. You know, this is the season that you really get into it. And, you know, really, once you get your lawn established, you know, and it comes in and it's nice and healthy and it's thick and it's dense, that alone is going to do like 95% of keeping weeds out.
Sure.
It really, it does. The front of our yard at home, and I wanted to put my photograph. You know, I'm not bragging or anything. I've been doing the Fertilin three-step for 20 years. I mean, wow. I've been using Fertilin product for longer than that.
Wow.
And, you know, I've been around a little bit, Ernie. Once you get that lawn established, it's going to do most of the work for you, keeping weeds out. It really does. And, you know, the other 5% that kind of sneaks in there on you is up to you. Just take your pocket knife, dig it out, or buy a little spray bottle of a weed killer or a selective herbicide and get it out, because it makes all the difference in the world. And those of you who still have to do a little bit of lawn renovation or, you know, repair some areas, or even if it's a total lawn renovation, you still have one option. And we've kind of failed to bring this up. And it's not because we failed to bring it up, I should say, because I don't think about it often. But our good friend over at Turpin Farms, Turpin, sod. Why not sod?
Sure.
You know, go over there, give Turpin Farms a call. And when you go to the front office and you buy the sod, they'll tell you to go over and pick it up, and it's that fresh. And beware where you buy sod, because not everybody knows how to properly take care of it once it's sitting out in front of the store.
Yeah.
And as hot as it's been, they don't unroll it. They don't allow air to it. There's a window of opportunity to get sod down. So keep in mind, you know, look at that. Pay attention. Ask them how long it's been there. But if you go right to the source, Turpin Farms, bingo, you're getting a fresh cut.
It's like the garden to table kind of fresh.
Absolutely. It's like buying a cake today and eating it the day that it was baked. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It tastes better. Cake doesn't taste better 6 days later. 10 days. Well, to Ernie, it does.
It's okay.
I've seen you eat that stuff. It's been sitting out overnight with the lid open. You could throw it and it would break glass. It's that hard. But I've seen you tear into it.
Yeah. There was a pizza box in there today.
It said Beast.
Someone did the Beast. And when I first saw it, I thought, oh, great. I have a little pizza breakfast. And it was empty. So I just thought.
Did you open it up, really?
I did open it up.
You're chilling.
But I'm the guy that threw it away. Somebody just left it out on the counter and it tricked me.
Oh. Do you like cold pizza, by the way?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mind cold pizza.
Cold pizza and milk the next morning.
Milk? No, wait, man. I'm done. No. And forget that. Okay, there's some other things you can do. We're going back to gardening, not cold pizza.
Yeah.
Also, I want to put some emphasis on the Taking Root Initiative. We've talked about that off and on throughout the course of the season. And the Taking Root Initiative is a vision, you know, that we have here in a tri-state area. And we're trying to plant 2 million trees by the year 2020. And that's a tree for everyone in the Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana region. You know, we've had some issues with our ash trees. So what's important, if you plant a tree this fall, is to go online, go to takingroot.org, and register your tree. We're trying to reach this goal. So, so important. I can't say it enough. Also, we're talking about planting and trees and shrubs. The fall right now is the best time to plant trees and shrubs. Take advantage of the weather, and as we progress throughout the fall season and as we start seeing the leaves fall from the trees, when we plant those trees, you know, we get them from the nurseries and the garden centers, there's less stress that's put on that tree when it's planted this time of year than any other time throughout the season. And they still will take, you know, they're rooting. The ground's still warm throughout the month of November and December, so there's a lot of activity underground, although we don't see anything up on the top side. So, so important. And get with your local garden centers and nurseries and start mapping out if you need to do a little bit of landscape renovation or you're wanting to plant trees and shrubs. The fall is the ideal time to do it, and the spring's a good time to do it as well. I wish more people would do it in the fall than what they do. But get with your local garden centers and nurseries that have landscape design teams and start mapping it out, because now is the perfect time. Then you can go through the winter months. You can get all your magazines and books out, or go to the library, go to the bookstores, to the periodical section, and just start getting ideas.
Sure. And journal.
And, yeah, keep notes. Take notes.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy was getting on me the other day we were talking about the garden journal. Scott Stenson, my neighbor down the street. Always getting on me. Always telling me about the show. Great guy. We banter back and forth.
Yeah.
And I need to take a picture of his wisteria that I've talked about before. You know, he's always getting on me like, you don't keep in a garden journal. Well, you're wrong, Scott. You know, I used to really keep details in a journal. But he called me out on this about a week ago. And I'm going to call you out, Scott. He has a wisteria that's grown right up on the corner of his house.
Yeah.
It's behind his gutter. It's going up on his roof. And I'm trying to tell him something, but he's not listening. Great guy, but he's always getting on me. Kind of funny.
That's probably him now calling
you. No, it's not. I need to silence that one. But, yeah, it's all in fun. And sure. I was even talking to him about pruning up a tree. His birch tree is like leaning out into the sidewalk. It would take your head off. So you got to go out into the street to walk around the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about it, Big T. What are friends for?
That's right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Jerome Meatfeld is going to be joining us.
When we come back out of the break, hopefully we'll get Jerome settled in here. We're going to talk about fall ball. And the things that you need to know, the things that you can do, and also another little tip about fall bulbs and containers, and it's called lasagna layering.
Lasagna.
Lasagna. You like that?
I love lasagna. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Several ways to stay connected with us. Make sure you can give us a call, 749-B105. And you can also jump onto our Facebook page. Easy to do. Post pictures, post questions. And Jerome has joined us. Let's get your microphone all set up there.
Yeah, we'll get him set up. Bring me on.
Bring me in, Ernie, bring me in, brother. I'm not feeling the love from you. No, but we were talking just before we went into the break about bulbs. And our good friend Jerome Mingfeld has just joined us. And as I was telling you earlier in the program, that Jerome is from the Netherlands. And good morning, Jerome. How are you?
Good, Tony. Thank you for having me again.
You're welcome. That plane ticket wasn't as expensive as it was last year to get you to come across the pond and visit us this morning. No, I'm just kidding. Boy, the radio station, they give us a lot of flexibility, don't they, Ernie? But, Jerome, tell us a little bit about, as you were a youngster and you were growing up in the Netherlands and how you got involved with the bulb industry and so forth, because that's where all the bulbs come from, that area. Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. The area where I grew up in, there's a lot of flower bulb farms. It's wherever you go, it's farms everywhere. And as a young boy, at 10 years of age, I already started working a little bit on the farms. You know, nowadays it's not really allowed anymore. You know, but it was kind of fun. So I've been in the business for quite a few years already. Sure. You know, not really.
Without telling your age, how many years? I know that it gives it away, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's easy. I'm not 35 years. So I'm 45 right now. So. Wow.
So, nice. Youngster.
Yes.
A youngster.
So, but it was fun, you know. It's a thing to do. It's what a lot of school kids do in the summertime. You know, it's vacation time, and the farms need help, and it's harvest time. So there's plenty of work to do, you kind of grow up with it, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about your company too, because Netherland Bulb has been around for some time. And we buy a lot of our fall bulbs. Well, we buy all of our bulbs from you. And you've been a great sales rep over the years. And it's always a pleasure to have you to come into the show with us and talk about bulbs and the importance of bulbs. And some of the tips, some of the different things that we need to know about bulbs. And so tell us a little bit about Netherland Bulb, too, as a company.
Netherland Bulb has been around for over 30 years as the company itself. The although the owners have been in the business for, you know, it's a family business for generations already, so that goes back into the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. And so the founder of the company I work for, he's 87 years old. And he's actually still active with the business.
Really?
And his children do the day to day business and run it. And it's a family owned and operated business. It's a great place to work for.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have always been good to us, and I know that you sell a lot of bulbs to a lot of the local garden centers and nurseries here throughout the tri-state area, you know, both, well, in Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana. And I wish more people would plant bulbs. You know, where is that going? You know, are you seeing a trend upward, down? Or where do you see bulbs today? Do you think we need to put more emphasis on it? Of course you do. You should.
Well, you know, I think it's a great opportunity for many garden centers. Although what I do see, it's one of those items that not enough people are aware of, that they have to buy them in the fall and enjoy them in the springtime. The big challenge that we face nowadays is that people will see them in the springtime and will come and see them blooming, and look, I'm asking everybody in the gardens, and they say, well, hey, I see those tulips blooming, can I get some? And a lot of people don't realize, you know, you have to buy them in the fall and plant them then, and then wait a couple months until you can enjoy them. But that's a cycle of flower bulbs. They need to be planted before the wintertime, and they need that wintertime as a cooling period, and then they grow in springtime. So
yeah, bingo! You hit the nail on the head. It's spring when people see the bulbs. It's like, you know, I want to pick some of those up.
Right.
Well, you're about 2 months, 3 months behind.
So that's a definite challenge. You know, everything is very much what we call geared towards instant gratification. You know, it's I see it and I want it, and it's, you know, with plants that doesn't really work that way. You know, it's, you cannot just manufacture them just like that. It's a once in a year event for bulbs to grow, that's if you understand it, it's not that hard. It's just I feel we kind of lose that information, that knowledge about a lot of plants. So And I think that's one of the great things about being on the radio and doing talks and giving information and tell people about, hey, this is how this works. And it's not all that hard. It's just if you just realize that this is the right time, then, you know, you just go out and do it, you know?
Do you have any favorites? What are some of your favorite bulbs? I don't know. I've never even asked you that before. You know, I'm just curious.
That is such a hard question. That's, you know...
Cannas.
Not fair to say I like them all.
Sure, you should.
But I do like them all.
Sure.
But it's one of the things that have a little bit of a soft spot for are calla lilies.
I like the callus. Yeah,
it's a fairly, you know, in the industry it's a fairly newer item, and not as old as tulips have been around and daffodils. So. I grew those back in Holland on the farm that I worked for. Also hyacinths, and it's because, you know, the farm that I worked for, we grew so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you learn to appreciate that, you know, what you get to know. And
right.
You see the challenges, but you also see the beauty of it and what all goes into it. And that kind of makes it nice. It makes it beautiful.
Interesting. And you said... The calla lilies, keep that in mind because we're going to take a quick break. But the calla lily is a summer bulb.
Correct.
And I have a lot of things I want to add to that. And I do love the calla lilies. They are beautiful. When we come back out of the break, we're going to continue that conversation. And something you need to know about the calla lilies that a lot of people don't, but they get away with it. And we'll tell you that when we come back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, covering a lot of ground, talking about bulbs. And we have Jerome with us from Netherland Bulb. And
yes.
Thanks again for coming in.
As always, Jerome. Jerome is our bulb salesman, and we always enjoy having Jerome come in during the fall season and the spring season. Again, Jerome's with Netherland Bulb Company, and we're talking about fall bulbs for spring blooms. Before we went into the break, you said one of your favorites is the calla lily, which is one of those that you plant in the spring, and it gives you that beautiful color in the summer months. I noticed, or I hear a lot of feedback or customers tell me that they leave theirs in the ground all the time, and they winter over, and I'll kind of like hold my ears and say, you really don't want to do that. You're playing Russian roulette. But, you know, and two, I always keep in mind, every little area around our homes has its own little microclimate. But people are getting away with it. And really, it's a zone 7, which is a little south of us. What's your spin on that?
Well, Tony, I do get the same reports as you do. Very frequently, people tell me, say, hey, yeah, those calla lilies, how'd they come back for me year after year? And so usually what I do is I ask them, you know, okay, where do you plant them? Where mm-hmm. around the house are they? And a lot of times it's close to the home. You know, it's in a good bed where it's well drained, and it's especially where it's protected from the frost for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key thing for calla lilies. They don't like to be they don't like the frost. They will rot, and they're very very sensitive to that. But close to the house, it's that perfect microclimate sometimes,
mm-hmm.
especially on the south side of the house where the sun hits. And it never really gets cold enough for them to be killed off, and so they tend to survive. And especially when they're planted a little deeper, which is, you know, these are all things that are completely against what I would do as a grower. You know, back from Holland, you know, we would be very careful how we treat them.
Right.
But you know, in people's yards, it seems to work out that way. So. Yeah, it's great when they get back. I can't give a guarantee that they will forever, you know, because we may hit that perfect cold weather and you may lose them. So, but it's hey, good for you if it works that way for some time.
Apparently it does, but I always caution people about that.
Yep.
And you know, talking about the calla lily amongst other lilies, various varieties, or even the dahlias. The cannas, you know, Ernie always talks about his
I love them.
His big cannas. Those are the types of bulbs and so forth and tubers that you lift after we get to that first hard freeze or second hard freeze, and you need to store those. Give us a little bit of information on what we need to do, when to do it, and how to store those types of bulbs and tubers.
Yeah, ideally, if you really want to keep those, you do need to lift them up after your first or second good freeze, so the foliage has died back
mm-hmm.
That's above the ground, and then Then yeah, take a shovel and lift them up. Clean the bulbs off. And you got to split those summer flowering bulbs into two categories. You know, there's a category that you want to store in a cool environment, and preferably with a little bit of moisture around it. You know,
and
with
which would that be? Would that be a dahlia?
Dahlias like that. Okay. Cannas are like that. You know, those are the two main, the main groups. But then you have also like gladiolus,
mm-hmm.
Those you want to store dry. You know, you don't want to keep it moist because it has a shell or a skin.
It's a corm, right?
It's a corm.
Yeah.
And they, you know, you store them cool but dry. And you know, elephant ears, you can store those. You have to store those. No, not really hot, but definitely not cold.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in between temperature, you know,
exposed or a little peat moss around them.
No,
just a smidge of moisture, or keep them totally dry.
Completely dry.
Because you don't want them to rot or get soft.
Exactly.
Right.
The cooler you do it, you know, say below 40 degrees, that's mm-hmm. when you start to lose them even in storage. They don't have to be even frosted on. Sometimes if it's too cool, so below 40 degrees, you can lose them. Caladiums is another thing,
right?
You know, it's an item that is a little bit more popular down south than up here, but you see still see them quite a bit here in landscape jobs and stuff. They also need to be stored very dry, but those you need to store very warm as much as possible. So you know, put them in your living room. No, mm-hmm. just kidding. But you know, yeah, warm.
Got it.
You know, would be ideal.
Or a garage, perhaps in the 40s, low 50s, maybe.
Yeah, kind of some semi-heated garage.
Right, yep. And just back off the watering and just leave them sit idle or
dry, kind of dry, dry, dry. Dry. Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to remember the gentleman's name. Matt Roast. He lives over in Latonia. Has a beautiful yard, and it's mostly tropicals, you know, a lot of banana trees and so forth, and his elephant ears are just stunning. I mean, the leaves on those elephant ears are so large, it's incredible. You can almost hide behind them, they're that large. But what he typically does, he brings them inside, but they're in containers, he'll put them in containers, but he always leaves a leaf. He'll cut everything off and leaves one leaf, enough, and just backs off the watering. Obviously, he stores them just right to where the next year, you know, it's just even a bigger plant. It's incredible. So doing that in a garage, is that advisable? What's your take?
When you do elephant ears in containers, that's a perfect way that, as you described, to cut them back and mm-hmm. leave some one or two leaves on there.
Mm-hmm.
But they, you know, it's a live plant, so it still is somewhat active.
Mm-hmm.
So it does need a little bit of watering during the winter time, and it definitely needs some light.
Mm-hmm.
So a garage would not be a good place.
No,
you know, they do need light, and otherwise, the leaves will turn yellow and it will go completely dormant. And the way, you know, if the reason why he does it that way is, you know, you get a head start for next springtime. You know,
exactly.
It's already, you know, it doesn't have to wait until it flushes out completely. And so it gets bigger that way if you can start earlier.
That's
so.
What I do. I bring mine into the greenhouse. I'm fortunate enough, I have the luxury of a greenhouse. And people are like, can we rent space? No. I don't want to bring things in. You know, my stuff's okay.
Right.
But no, I don't want to do that. But I have those upright elephant ears. I love those. Always leave a leaf on them. And, you know, something else that homeowners should be really pay close attention to, when you do that and you store an elephant ear in such a way, keep an eye out for spider mites. They love those things. And when they're indoors, that's when you're plagued with that issue with spider mites for the most part.
Right.
But, you know, I have to ask you, I have a black-stemmed elephant ear. What is that variety? Is that the name of a black-stemmed elephant ear? Because it will not tolerate the least bit of sun. Like some of the others. Does that ring a bell with you?
There's quite a few varieties that would fit that description.
Make one up. Calocasia nigra. I don't know.
Well,
make one, and just
it has the green leaves, has a black leaves. Is it just the stem is black?
The black green leaves and a black stem. Jet black.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I put you on the spot, didn't I?
Yeah,
that's what happens to me here on the radio. You know?
Yeah,
it's like, wait a minute.
I'm going to play the same question, same trick as you do with most of your customers. Say, just send me a picture. I'll tell you what it is.
that's Ernie's trick right there. That's an Ernie's bag of tricks.
Well, I wanted to go back to the cannas, the bulb storing in a cool place, you just can't let them freeze? Is that what you're trying to say? Because my first thought was, okay, I can keep them down in the basement or like in a, my wife in the laundry room has an area where she keeps all of her canned goods. Is that cool enough, or do I need to find some other place that doesn't really freeze but stays cool?
As long as it doesn't freeze, you should be fine.
Okay.
So below 40 degrees, between, you know, 35, 40 degrees would be an ideal temperature.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you don't know what temperature it is, just get a thermometer, see what it is, so you have a little idea what's really the temperature is in that room.
And you mentioned to clean them, like brush them off, or should I rinse them off? And
you get a bathtub with them, Ernie. Yeah. What do you think?
Right.
Shampoo, no. You know, actually, for the bulbs or the tubers or the corms that you don't, that you keep them in a moist environment, you don't have to clean those really, completely clean.
That's, okay.
It's okay to have some dirt around it. That's fine. It actually gives them an extra protective layer.
Okay.
Because ideally, if you want to keep them in that environment where it's kind of moist, it would be great to have them in a kind of a perforated bag or with moist peat moss in there or
right.
Something like that. That will hold some moisture but doesn't really dry out. You know, mm-hmm. So that's why you put a. That's how we store them in our coolers in the warehouse. You know, in a plastic bag that can ventilate. You know,
right.
So you don't want to lock them up and suffocate them.
I got you.
But so that's. Just keep the moisture level decent, but not wet. You know. So
now, when would Ernie want to divide his cannas and get more out of them? You know, as they start to naturalize, you can break those apart. What are you looking for when you do that?
If you lift them up, I would not break them
until you plant them. Right.
The thing is, when you break the corm of a, for instance, like a calla lily, like a canna. You create a wound, and that wound can be it's an open door for all kinds of pests or funguses or mm-hmm. bacteria, okay. and in the worst case scenario, you may even lose the corm because of that.
Okay.
So the best way is just leave them as much intact as you can during the winter time, and then if you want to break them up or want to divide them a little bit, then do it right before you plant them, because then they start growing. And they outgrow that wound that you just created.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to take another quick break. When we come out of the break, I'm going to tell you what my favorite bulb is, and we're going to talk about the fall bulbs, and we're going to continue this conversation. And most importantly, when it comes to the proper planting depths, there's some things that you need to know, and we'll be right back.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jerome McFeld from the Netherland Bulb Company with us. We'll be right back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jerome Minkfeld from the Netherland Bulb Company with us again this morning and picking up a lot of information. You were helping me with some of the prep work and lifting the cannas bulb that we absolutely love at our house. But my question is, so I wait till the second good freeze, and do I cut the stalks off and then dig them up?
You can, you know, a lot of times the leaves will have kind of melted and kind of falling on the ground and turning brown a little bit. So you can easily just wipe those off or cut those off and just bring the rest of the plant inside and just let it naturally die back. So what actually happens then is the nutrients that are still in the leaves that are on the corm, will be going back into the corm, and it will provide extra food storage for the wintertime.
Right.
So just let the natural process take its place, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, you know, within a few weeks, you can just kind of tell all the leaves have died back and they're kind of crisp and
right.
brown,
okay.
and then you just clean them off, and then you're ready for long term storage.
And then is there anything special I need to do soil prep before we put it back in?
Well, yeah, like most bulbs and corms, they're like a pretty well-drained soil,
mm-hmm.
Like your average flower beds that have been worked out and amended over time. Those are usually great. stick them in the raw clay that we find so often here is sometimes a little challenging. You know, certain areas are better than others, but uh-huh. That sometimes is not an ideal situation. It's good to loosen it up and add a little bit organic matter to it.
Sure.
So you give it a little bit more food mm-hmm. around it, but especially break up the soil a little bit and work right. and make it loose like you would do with almost any planting mm-hmm. for other plants.
Yeah, there's the oddest thing is it took me quite some time. Tony came out to our house early in the spring and just shook his head and said, "Oh, you've got a mess," because it had gotten overgrown with weeds and we had to, some construction work had to be there done in that area. So it'd been ignored for years. So I killed everything as he suggested, all of the weeds that were growing there. Then we raked all that out, then tilled it up, then shoveled all of that out and got rid of all the ash and as much as that we could. Then went back with some brand new soil and some fertilizer, I guess, or potting soil mixture. Tony had a recommendation there. And all the new cannas came up and looked awesome. And then out of the blue, I don't know if this thing had just gotten lost somewhere down in the soil, one of the old ones popped up. It didn't make the progress that the other ones did, but we have all these dark-leaved cannas, and then there's one that's about 3 feet tall that I guess said, "Whoa, I'm going to come back up and give it a shot again." It was surprising.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes. Bulbs and corms have an unbelievable ability to survive sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's... we have it, an interesting example. We find it sometimes in our bulb fields in Holland, where under certain circumstances, what tulips will do is, if they're in a certain, I'm not sure what triggers it, but a little bit of a stress situation, they'll put down what we call a little sinker bulb, and it will drop down and it will grow, you know, a couple of inches below the regular bulbs. And
yeah.
when you harvest them, it's too deep, you miss them. And next springtime they'll come up. It's
wow.
like how did that happen? You know, it's amazing how plants can work. It's but they sometimes the survival ability is amazing.
I guess that's what that was. This was just a little survivor. This guy was going to hang on, and maybe when we amended the soil and some of that those nutrients and the things started to creep down in there, it woke it back up and said, "Oh, let's go give it a shot."
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Earning those cannas, I tell you.
Oh,
yeah,
love them.
Yeah, he loves them. My favorite, though, we're talking about different things. You know, you like the calla lilies. I love the alliums. I can't get enough allium. Need more cowbell. Need more allium. Okay? But I love the alliums. Have they not taken center stage in recent years, or do you think so? You get a lot of bang for your buck there.
Alliums are definitely one of my in the top group of favorite flowers there too.
Mm-hmm.
They did make a pretty good comeback. I'm not sure if it's a comeback, but they gained in popularity definitely the last years. I see more and more people being interested in them, and for good reason. They bloom a little bit later after your tulips mm-hmm. and your daffodils have bloomed out. Then
mm-hmm.
Somewhere in April and May the alliums start to bloom, and the flowers actually last quite a long time. And not only that, if they bloomed out, they're still fun to look at, because if
absolutely
the old flower head will dry up, but it's still, you know, especially certain varieties, they're pretty neat to look at.
You know, the one that I hear most people comment on is Chabrutii, mm-hmm. is that right? And that's got that real big bloom. How large is that bloom? About
that can measure 16 inches. That's unbelievable.
I hear it all the time. People say, you know, I just let it dry on there, and I'll keep it, I'll cut it, and use it in just, you know, they'll take it inside and put it in vases. It has a really neat look to it.
Yeah, some people spray paint it and give it an extra fun look over it.
There you go, Ernie. You spray paint one of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, the alliums come in an array of different sizes and shapes, you know, like we're talking about Chabrutii and so forth, and you have Gladiator. That's another favorite. Globemaster is another favorite. Are those bloom sizes pretty similar, or which one of the two has the bigger bloom?
There's a few varieties in the market that have a bloom size of 7-8 inches diameter, And the major difference between those varieties is the flower height. Certain mm-hmm. ones, you know, they're a little bit on the shorter size of, say, about 24 inches. Then you have some intermediate size that go into, mm-hmm. you know, 30 inches, 36. And then you have some real tall ones that go, you know, over 4 foot even.
Right.
So that's where the difference comes in. Yeah.
And I really like another one called Drumsticks. Kind of very unique, different size. You know, that's like around 2 foot, smaller blooms. And another one that, do you sell a lot of the Ivory Cream? Because it looks like that's kind of more geared or towards containers.
Yeah, the Ivory Cream
is very short.
Yeah, that's a very low growing thing. Mm-hmm. Has very broad leaves, but a fairly big flower head compared to the size of the plant. And makes a great makes a good bulb for the container, but also just in a center space in the yard. You want to give it a little bit visual space because it's not as definitely not as tall
right.
as the other ones that are easily planted in the background and are still very visible.
What about forcing alliums? Is that doable, especially when you're trying to promote this one in a container? How would you do that? Would you just leave that in your garage? Would that be cool enough?
You can definitely grow them in the container. Forcing, make them bloom earlier they're not too great for that. They just like to do their own thing and follow what mm-hmm. how they would behave in a natural environment outside. But you can definitely grow most of them in a container mm-hmm. and use them that way. That's a lot of growers do that too. They offer them, they buy them and pot them up that way, and then offer them in the springtime for people to take home.
Yeah, the alliums are my favorite. I do, by far. I just love them. There's so many different varieties, and also you can couple those up with when you get the bloom on the alliums in the spring. That there's a perennial allium called Millennium. Great performer. So I think these guys all planted amongst one another will give you a beautiful show from spring throughout the summer, and you can't beat that. If you're looking for color and you like the Allium family, those would be my go-tos.
It's a lot of variety in the Allium yeah. family. You know, your regular chives, you know, the edible mm-hmm. ones, that's mm-hmm. we all know that belongs to the to that same family. The garlics is
garlic.
Part of it. You know, onions come in that same... In the same family a little bit, and then all the ornamentals that we offer, and there's so much variety in that, and definitely worth a place in your garden.
Yeah, we were talking about garlic last week. This is a great time to plant garlic too, isn't it?
That's absolutely right. Yep.
And tell us a little bit about the differences. You know, we touched on it last week about the various types of garlic. You have the soft neck garlic and you have the hard neck garlic. What comes into play there when you're planting soft neck versus hard neck? What would you do?
Well, it's a matter of taste and of preference between the varieties. But most garlics, pretty much all garlics, we prefer to plant them in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
For the main reason is it likes to go through the winter time. It likes that cool period after it's planted. So for that reason, the best time is in the fall, and they'll just follow the growing cycle in the spring and the summertime. But you can also plant garlic perfectly in the springtime, but the best time would be to plant it early in the springtime. Garlic doesn't like to be planted right before the heat comes on. They like that period of, about a month or two of fairly cool mm-hmm. soil temperature. And that's where they perform the best.
Now, are the hard necks a little bit more tolerant of wet soils, or soils that stay a little... They don't want to be wet, don't get me wrong, but the soft necks will have a tendency that they could rot quicker or easier than the hard necks. Is that right?
Yeah, the soft necks are the easiest to grow. That's why they're the most popular ones. That's why you see those most around.
Mm-hmm.
But the hard necks are, you know, they have more variety. There's more different flavors in mm-hmm. hard neck types. The soft neck types are proper also because when you harvest them, the stems they stay soft for quite a while,
right.
and you can braid them if you want to. And I think if I'm correct, they do keep a little better.
Which one stores better? So the soft neck stores better than the hard neck?
I believe the soft neck store a little better.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, if you've not had fresh garlic out of the garden versus what you just buy at the store, there's no comparison. It's night and day. And also, if you're growing your own garlic, I did this last year for the first time. I used the scapes, you know, and made a pesto with it. Very tasty. So there's a lot of things that you can do with garlic. And I think if people were to try garlic, you don't need a lot of room.
No, you can you can even do it in containers if you want to, but it's actually a very easy thing to grow. You just split the cloves and spread them out, and you don't want to plant them very deep. You know, you want to keep them a little bit on the surface, and then just tend to them, and they'll reward you big time.
Awesome. Well, we got a lot of ground still yet to cover with bulbs. We still have to talk about planting depths, the proper planting depth. Also, we'll talk a little bit about fertilization, too, when it comes to bulbs. Maybe sometimes why they come up blind, if you've experienced that. We have Jeroen Minkveld with us from Netherland Bulb. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're having a good time talking with our friend Jeroen Minkveld from the Netherland Bulb Company, and answering a lot of your questions, too, about your bulbs. But we want to touch now about a proper depth to bury them, or to plant them instead of bury.
Yeah, sometimes, too, a lot of gardeners like to share things, you know, with one another. And some of those things that they share, not only are they perennials or, you know, shrubs or whatever, it's bulbs as well. And so sometimes people don't have the package information that says, hey, this is the proper planting depth. Is there just a good procedure to follow, a good rule of thumb to say, hey, if you're given some bulbs based on if they're tulips or if they're daffodils or if they're hyacinths, what kind of depth you should consider planting them at?
Well, the easy rule to follow that kind of works for the most part is look at the size of your bulb.
Mm-hmm.
If you the smaller bulbs, you want to plant more to the surface, and the bigger bulbs you want to plant deeper. So look at the size of the bulb, kind of multiply it by three, and that gives you how deep to plant it. So if you like a tulip, it's a good example. It's about 2 inches long, two inches from top to bottom, maybe 3 inches. So, in the measure from the bottom of the bulb, what I'm looking at is mm-hmm. so eight inches deep for the bottom of the bulb is sitting on. So that also gives you a guideline also for the spacing, how far to plant each bulb apart from each other.
Right.
You know, use the same rule. You know, 2 to 3 times the size of the bulb is a good measurement. So, and that shows you right. The small bulbs will go a little higher.
Right.
But there are also great planting charts to find online. I saw you posted one on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much every bulb company you can find, they will have a chart where, you know, these are very easy to find. Just Google, planting depth for tulips or bulbs in general. And,
right.
And then you'll find one.
Is the website still available, Dig Drop Done?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's, a lot of great information on there too, right?
We keep that alive. And, because it's such a great source for all kinds of information. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that is promoting any bulb company or any particular mm-hmm. thing. It's just to service the public with
awareness.
Yeah, with the awareness and with good information that you can that you can really use.
Perfect. We have Jane with us from over in the Dayton, Kentucky area this morning, and she wants to talk a little bit about garlic. Good morning, Jane. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Doing well.
Good. I was calling because I heard about the garlic, planting it, and we use garlic in everything, so I'm wanting to plant it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I heard him say you split it in two, or you, one of you guys. Is it just a regular head of garlic that you get from the grocery store?
Yeah, that's a great question because, Jeroen, is there a difference between what you buy at the grocery store and planting it versus what you buy from someone like us with garden centers? Is there... I've seen some information before, and I don't have it at my fingertips. There is a difference.
Honestly, I'm not really sure. There's a difference, but I'm not really sure what the difference would be. It has maybe to do with the storage, how we treat them to keep them in our storage rooms, temperature wise. In all honesty, I'm not really aware of a big difference between
the two.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to try it.
Well, I think there's a benefit too. If you do one of two, do both of these things, I would try the garlic from the grocery store that you typically buy.
Okay.
Obviously, you're not going to know the variety.
Right.
Okay, so that's kind of, you know, that's given. And over at Jackson Florist and Garden Center, we carry a couple different varieties. The German Hardy and one called Music, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So you might even try that, too, because those are hardneck garlics. Most that you find in the grocery store, from what I've experienced, have been the softneck varieties.
Okay. Well, I went to Highland Garden Center the other day, and I wish I would have heard about this before.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would have seen if they had, you know, some of them. But I'm going to try it with the store bought and see what happens, and also go get some if Highland Garlic or Highland Garden Center has it.
And, you know, and just, you know, keep notes and, you know, we always talk about keeping like a little garden journal.
Right.
And, you know, follow up with us and tell us if you notice a difference between what you buy at the grocery store and planting it versus what you buy that's meant to be grown for specific varieties, so to speak.
Okay, now when you say split it, do you mean split it in half or split it in two?
Well, no, you're not. Well, we were talking about bulb division at that point in time. With your garlic, you're going to have the whole bulb.
Uh-huh.
And what you're going to do, you just want to break it up into individual cloves.
All right, okay.
Okay, and those individual cloves are what you're going to push below the soil surface, like at 2 to 3 inches.
Okay, and do you leave the skin on or take it off?
Leave the skin on is fine.
Okay.
And the beauty about planting garlic, when I did it last year, I've done it a couple of different ways. I've done it in my beds, my garden bed, and I've also done it in containers.
Uh-huh.
There's a, I tell you, a great container that I've done it with and had great success was the Earth Box.
Oh, okay.
I wish more people would use the Earth Box and look for it. It's very easy to use. It's great for people who have space constraints or you have patio areas that you can grow on or small decks or little porches, you know, if you're in apartments.
Okay.
But that's a great way to do it. And plant your bulbs about 4 inches apart, or the cloves.
Okay.
And once, plant them now. Once they come up, you'll get some nice growth. During the winter months, just mulch the garlic with straw.
Okay.
And then next year, look for those scapes, cut the scapes, do a pesto out of them, and as the garlic continues to grow, and as you start seeing the stems brown off a little bit, that's when you'll harvest.
Oh, okay.
All right? All right, Jane, we expect to hear from you next year.
Now I have a big problem. We have raccoons digging up our lawn.
Oh. Mm-hmm. I know what's going on, more than likely.
What's that?
I think I know what's going on, more
than
likely.
They're probably looking for grubworm seed.
They are. They're
okay.
Looking, they're,
how can I get rid of them or keep them away?
Well, I've always trapped raccoons.
Yeah.
But the other thing, too, is that might be an indicator for you that you have a serious grub issue.
Oh, I'm and, sure I do. I told my husband I do because I've been digging, putting my flowers out for the fall.
Right,
and
right.
I see a lot of grubs.
And
so
you know,
treat that. Do you, should we treat it this fall or wait until spring?
Well, there's two various points of treating, you know, more of a proactive approach, and you'll do that like late April, May, because that's when the beetles are laying their eggs in June. That product has gotten into the turf, and usually that's imidacloprid. It gets into the turf, and when they start to feed on the roots, they die.
Okay.
Okay, there's a whole window of opportunity. In your particular situation right now, it's more of a curative approach. And anything that has dilox in it, get it down. But what happens is, as those larvae become larger and we start getting colder temperature-wise, the soil temperatures start declining,
mm-hmm.
they start going deep, which makes it even more difficult to get to them.
Right.
So that's definitely an indicator you have some issues going on with grubs. You know, the skunks will dig for them. The raccoons will dig for them. You know, get with the SPCA. They used to loan out, but you would have to give them a deposit, raccoon traps. Like it or not, I can't say it enough, the Have a Heart raccoon traps are very effective. Put a can of tuna in there, and I'm sure we're going to hear all kinds of ways to catch them.
Well, but, my husband has 4 traps.
There you go. So
we'll probably take your advice, put some tuna in there and catch some. I counted 5. We usually get up about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I counted 5 in my yard.
Wow.
Like.
Yeah, you got a lot of work ahead of you. But, Jane, we expect to hear from you next year, and you give us a full garlic report.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend.
You do the same.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Jerome Meekvale from the Netherland Bulb Company with us. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Jerome Meekvale from the Netherland Bulb Company with us again this morning. And before we get to our final segment with you, give us your contact information, Jerome.
like your phone number, your cell number. We can just call you on the whim.
your website and how they can reach out to you.
Well, the best way to find information about what we do is you can go on our website, netherlandbulb.com.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more geared for for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But for the consumers, for the homeowners, one of the best places to go to is a website called digdropdone.com. So digdropdone.com, and that has a lot of consumer oriented information, how to plant, when to plant, what is a bulb, and all these. It's great education. It's a lot of fun videos on it, and there's I believe there's ways on that you can post questions and people get back to you mm-hmm. on it. So, and otherwise, hey, go to your local garden store. That's where the people are, and that's sometimes a lot more helpful than mm-hmm. talking with somebody on the phone because it's more right. one-on-one situation.
Go to your local garden stores, most definitely. You know, I think that I do remember seeing something on Dig Drop Done. You can take a little personality quiz to see what bulb best suits you based on your personality, I guess. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm going to try that sometime. And I noticed I don't see the girls on there like I used to. The one that had the big beer can hair curlers, the rollers. Are they still on that website?
I believe they... They retired them.
They retired them. Okay.
So they keep it up. And, and they modernize it and they keep it updated. So yeah, try to stay.
We'll
relevant.
Put a link on our website yep. with that and a link for the Facebook page. That's a great website. You know, real quick too, fertilization when it comes to what we do when we fertilize for bulbs. Give us a little bit of insight because you know we all like to use various things. Is it best to do it before they bloom, in the winter, fall, or after they bloom, what's best?
Okay, the best way is either mix your fertilizer in the soil mm-hmm. before you plant it. As with anything that you do plant, annuals or perennials or woodies, you never throw the fertilizer in the hole where you plant your bulb or where the roots are, because it will burn the roots. So you always want to have it mixed into the soil.
Right.
That's a good start. If you forget to do it, then no problem at all. Then just throw it on top of the ground where you have planted, and. Bulb tone is a great fertilizer for it, but also a lot of the more slow release are effective. You know,
bone meal
is a great thing. Keep in mind to do it. You can do a little bit of that is slow release right when you plant it before the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't do it too much right then because some of the elements will just wash out and they will dissolve and will never reach the roots enough. So a good time would be like very early in springtime before or late wintertime before the bulbs come up.
Okay.
And so that's when the bulbs have the most of benefit from it.
Perfect. You know, something we were talking about earlier too before you joined us this morning in the studio. Another popular trend when it comes with bulbs, and it kind of involves forcing, but it's what we call lasagna layering, taking a big pot and planting various species of bulbs at various levels. Do you see a lot of people doing that, or what? You know, what do you think?
Yeah, it's
some really neat stuff.
Yeah, we see that going on too. We also promote it. We give out the information mm-hmm. that we send out to the garden centers. Basically, what you do is you take a big container and you fill it up as you would with that you would plant bulbs in there. You mm-hmm. know, and use the same. Technique as you would do outside, so you know the same planting depth and everything. So, but what you do is you start with your bigger bulbs at the proper planting depth, say about 6 inches deep, and say for your tulips and your daffodils, and then you take a smaller type of bulb like a miniature daffodil or things like that, and you put a second layer mm-hmm. just right on top of the first layer. First layer, you put the bulbs in there, you put extra soil in there, then you make a second layer, you plant your miniature daffodils in there, or maybe some irises, some bulb Dutch irises. And then you could do like a third layer on, even on top of that with some crocuses or muscari, your grape hyacinths, little things like that. So you and it that creates a very very fun thing, a very mixed container. Usually the early blooms will start to bloom early, the small bulbs that are on the top, and then the second layer kind of takes over because they naturally bloom a little bit later, and then the third layer will start growing and will bloom and will take that over. So you always have a very long bloom season because of that.
In the container. You know, I think that's a great way too to introduce kids to gardening with bulbs. Do it in a container, lasagna layer. Check it out on the website. We'll post that on our Facebook page. A lot of great information, Jeroen, as always. We've had Jeroen in here with us this morning from the Netherland Bulb Company. Jeroen is the bulb rep for most of us here in the tri-state area that have garden centers and nurseries. And our bulb sales have been very robust. A lot of people come in and tell us that they're hard to find, you know, for the most part, different varieties. And it's always a pleasure to have you in here. We want to have you in one more time before the end of the year because we have some other things we really need to hone in on. One of those is, you know, the paper whites. We can talk about paper whites, fun things to do with paper whites. And, I'm trying to think of Red Lion, the
amaryllis.
Amaryllis, thank you.
Yeah.
When we get closer to the holiday season and you want to give a nice little gift to somebody, a neighbor, a friend, a school teacher, the amaryllis make the perfect gift choice. Jeroen, thank you. It's always a pleasure to have you in here, and we'll do it again.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun, and I'm glad for the opportunity, and good luck gardening, everybody.
Yep, thank you. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to have Bob, the owner of the Basement Doctor Company, in to talk about how to make sure you have a nice, dry basement to enjoy. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we're about ready to welcome in our new guest, Bob from the Basement Doctor. We'll talk to him in just a few minutes and get them settled in. We've got a lot of ground to cover. You can jump on our Facebook page, post pictures, and pose questions. But before we get to them, we'll get them settled in. Tony, we have Edith on the line who's got a question about some small ornamental trees. Hi, Edith. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
So you have ornamental trees there, or do you you want to put some in where they're empty?
Want to put some in where they're empty.
Okay.
We bought our house about a year and a half ago, and unfortunately had to cut down a plum tree. It was on the side. It was way too close to the house and brushing up, and it just killed us to cut it down. But we want to replace it a little further out front, but on the corner of the house, but it's a two-story, and we don't want it to grow too tall to get the leaves into the gutter. So maybe like a 15 to 18 foot.
Yeah, no, it's you're thinking along the right lines because a lot of times people put large trees so close to the house out on a corner. And before you know it, it's up in the gutters, it's on the roof, and it becomes a ladder for squirrels and raccoons and all those pesky little friends to get up on the roof and make their way into the gutters and the eaves and so forth. So you're right on. I like that way of thinking because that's so important. You're looking for a few suggestions or varieties of small trees to plant, right?
Yes. I mean, obviously, a lot of people use the Japanese maple, and they're pretty, but it's kind of like my husband and I both were lived in Michigan when we were younger, and we love to look at the white birch, but that grows way too tall. Is there maybe a miniature white birch or something similar, or maybe even like a small plum that's
There is a birch that's shorter in stature. It's not a white, okay? It's called Little King.
Okay.
That's certainly a lot smaller than the standard Betula birch that we're also familiar with. And the birch is a beautiful tree. The white birch did better for you up in the northern part of the states because, you know, they're not as affected by borers up there as they are down here in our neck of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, you got to be really careful. I'll tell you a specimen that I really like a lot, well-behaved, up close to the house. It's somewhat airy. It's not a bully. And that's the Sweet Bay Magnolia, a very fragrant bloom, as a matter of fact. So that's also, an option. And did I kind of detect that you kind of weren't leaning towards a Japanese maple, perhaps?
Correct. although I will consider it.
Well, you know, don't think that they're all red, okay? And depending upon, you know, the space constraints and so forth, there are so many different varieties of Japanese maples out there. It's incredible. One in particular I really like a lot is one called Ryuzen. That would be a good choice. Also, like I said, the Sweet Bay Magnolia would be a good choice. Perhaps a dogwood, a small cherry, you know, like a Yoshino. Just as long as you give it some room and come out away from the house. There's Amelanchier Serviceberry. Autumn Brilliance is another good selection. If you pop me or send me an email, I will send you some other tree recommendations that would work best and be well-suited for your situation.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And just send me an email to inandaroundthehouse@b105.com.
Okay.
And then get back with us and let us know what you decide.
Sure will. Thank you very kindly.
You're welcome. Right.
Thanks, Edith.
You guys have a good weekend.
You too. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And boy, what a timely segment right now, because we are getting ready to go into the season where things are buttoning up and nobody wants issues in their basement. Welcome to the show, Bob. Bob is the owner of The Basement Doctor. And, boy, I guess, you know, you probably have been pretty busy with all the rain and stuff here recently, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. It's been a busy year.
I just can't imagine anyone that would have to suffer through one of those things where you have a leak or you have any issues, and then winter comes and they're stuck with that problem. So tell us a little bit about the company and how our listeners can reach out to you.
Well, The Basement Doctor's been around for 29 years, focused on fixing musty basements, damp basements, crawl spaces, and foundation repair. We're locally based here in Cincinnati and in Kentucky, and fix about 15 to 20 basements a week.
That's a lot of basements right there now. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of basements that leak, too. There are a lot of older homes as well, and not just necessarily older homes are affected with issues with leaky basements, but even some of the newer ones, I guess, that, you know, there are foundation issues or things have settled and moved like any other type of home. But, you know, you kind of, I don't know, there's a lot of leaky basement issues. And, you know, talking about that, what is, someone sees that, I guess they can identify with it with mold, obviously, or that musty smell. What is a homeowner to do when they identify or see a leak in a basement? Take us through the steps. Take us through the process of what it is that you're going to go over with the homeowner as far as what's going on and how to repair it.
Well, I mean, there's multiple ways, right? So if you have a crack in your wall, which, you know, concrete's prone to cracking. So if you have a crack in the wall, that's a pretty simple fix. We have a patented product called the FlexiSpan. We have 32 U.S. patents in the waterproofing and structure repair industry. So if you see water in your basement, just give us a call here or go on our website. We'll come out. We'll look at the problem, address the problem, and let you know exactly what it's going to cost you to fix it.
Well, give us the website and the phone number.
It's the Basement Doctor Cincinnati.com. And the local phone number is 513-554-0555.
And then you have one in Kentucky, right?
I do. It's Basement Doctor Kentucky, and it's 859-543-0709.
Got it. So, you know, do a lot of people come to you and say, hey, you know, we know we have an issue with a leaky basement. There's water, or we're having mildew issues or mold issues, and it's finished. You know, how do you go about identifying where that's coming from? Is there a way to do that?
Well, we have a lot of people that come up to us and say, you know what, I only get water in my basement when it rains.
Well, sure.
I mean, come on.
Hey, well, isn't that handy?
Yeah. Boy, that was astute of you to figure that out.
And my thing is, you know, I say to them, what do you think is going to rain again?
Right.
Because it's just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
So identifying it, one, you know, wet carpet is one good reason.
Right.
You know, one way you can find it. Pulling the carpet back, seeing the carpet tack where the nails are. So if you've got, you know, your carpet tack's getting black, then you know you're getting water in your basement as well.
So you have these patented processes. One was, what'd you call that, a flex?
Well, a FlexiSpan is a crack repair, but we have a product called the WaterGuard. It's our interior waterproofing system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old way of thinking was, you know, you waterproof it on the outside.
Outside, right.
It's going to stop it. Well, that's not true. So we go in and we put our patented product on the inside,
mm-hmm.
and then it carries a lifetime guarantee of the structure of the home.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the house is standing, it's guaranteed never to have water in that basement again.
Awesome. So other than what most people think is to fix it on the outside, really, is it best, more efficient to do it on the inside, obviously?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in addition to that, do you guys do anything with if someone needs to install or do a sump pump kind of situation? I'm just curious. Is that part of your equation or is that different?
No, absolutely. I mean, a sump pump is critical to mm-hmm. any kind of waterproofing.
Right.
Because if you think about it, hydrostatic pressure is the earth's pressure, and it's the water that's underneath the slab that you're trying to get out from underneath the mm-hmm. slab.
Right. Well, I've been fortunate, too. There's not any wood in here for me to knock on, but my home's about 20-something years old. And no sooner I'm going to say this, but I've been very fortunate. But some of it's exposed. The foundation's exposed. I'm on a hill somewhat, and it seems as if, you know, I'm always looking at that drain pipe or that tile that's out away from the house, and it seems to work well. So I've always kept my eye on that. So not only do you work with leaky basements, I understand that, you know, what about the houses that are settling and you start seeing that stair-stepping look in the brick? You know, you get that crack or it starts to separate, the shifting element. Do you work on those kind of issues for homeowners?
Yeah, so the good thing about us is we're diversified. So we do foundation repair, bowed walls. So if your wall is bulging in, we have a product for that where we can push the wall back out. If you're seeing the stair-step cracking in your brick or mm-hmm. something like that, that's a foundation failure. So what that is, it's breaking away and the footing is sinking. So to fix something like that, we have a product, it's called piering, all right, or underpinning,
mm-hmm.
where we go in and put steel piers underneath the footing and then raise the house back up using hydraulics and put it back in place.
Interesting. So is that pretty common? Water homes?
Very common around here because we have the clay soils that we have are very expansive.
So when we experience those long dry periods or those long wet periods, that those fluctuations is really what is what causes all that?
Yeah, people don't understand when it's really, really dry and mm-hmm. it's been dry for a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
you should water your foundation almost right. like watering your trees or
exactly.
your plants, you know?
Yeah.
So put the soaker hose around your house, run it for a little bit, keep that the clay soil expanded.
So, you know, and you mentioned something else about, do you do the hydraulic lifting?
Correct.
With like driveways, stoops,
yeah, so we have,
sidewalks?
Yeah, we have a new product out. It's state of the art. It's called PolyLevel. So what it is it's expandable foam.
Mm-hmm.
So where we can go in and inject it underneath the concrete and raise that slab back up.
How does that work? I guess you're going to measure how much something has dropped.
Correct. Yep.
So how do you know how much to put in there? And don't tell me it's a secret, it's proprietary. But how do you know how much to put in there that lays that just right? Or do you do it a little bit at a time?
Ancient Chinese secret.
Yeah, so what if you...
just want me to give him all my secrets. I can't do that.
But have you ever like, oh, that's too high?
No.
No? Okay.
So you just do it, you know, in small bursts. And until you get it up where you want it.
And does it, I guess it happens instantly?
Yeah.
Or is that over a period of time?
No, it happens instantly. So as soon as we start injecting it, it starts rising.
You know, I had an issue with, and I did have an issue with my home. It was the front stoop. And you know what? I don't know what you call those little supports that come off the foundation and hold that stoop up.
Like wing walls or
I'm not sure, but the gentleman that repaired it thought that they may have given way or cracked or had separated from the side of the foundation, when in fact they didn't. But what was interesting, it was dropping forward, and it was pushing up my trim around the door.
Yes, happens a lot.
Does that happen a lot?
Yep.
So same process with that, Bobby? Is it that you...
Same process would either be one, we can raise that back up with PolyLevel, or two, maybe you need to put two... underpins on each side of that and pull that back up.
And it's rather easy to do?
Yeah.
So you're drilling into, or are you drilling underneath, or both?
Well, it depends on what we're doing. So if we're lifting a slab, then we're drilling into the slab, injecting expandable foam, and raising mm-hmm. that slab up. Now, if it's on the front of a porch where the porch is dropped down, mm-hmm. maybe something like that would have to be underpinned mm-hmm. and picked back up.
How long is that? If you were to do something like that, like my next door neighbor, I know that he's got a real low spot where part of his driveway is cracked. And that would, I don't know. I don't know if I would necessarily raise that part of it unless it was a whole slab. But how long is that good for? When you raise something, you inject that foam in there. How long is that good for?
So if we inject foam with PolyLevel, then that has a 7-year warranty.
Seven.
That it will never move.
So after the, and I guess if after you do something of the sort, then somebody says, hey, I want to, you know, go ahead and just replace my driveway or widen the driveway or do whatever that you want to do or upgrade it. Is that stuff hard to remove? Is there any special things you got to do? Or just a foam?
Well, it's a good question, but no, it's under the slab, right?
Under the
slab. You don't see it. So if you're going to rip your slab out and replace it or mm-hmm. something like that, then, you know, it just comes up with the slab.
Interesting. I don't know. What did you do? Did you do anything of the sort when you had some water issues in your basement?
Well, ours wasn't necessarily a foundation problem. We have, again, it's an old house, but our house is on a lower part of an area where all of the houses behind us are elevated above and all the water was rushing down. So we expanded our patio and put mm-hmm. drains outside in the yard to carry the water away. But there was always an issue. And I can remember, to sound as old as I am, but in November, it will be in the house 30 years. And it was absolutely pouring down rain when I went to check the house out in order to buy it. Not an issue. And then we had a problem where maybe 5 years ago, of course, it was an older house. We had to replace the sewer line from the house all the way to the street. Then where that construction was, it settled, and that virtually opened the door for water to run in. And that's when we figured out that, we've at least got to redirect this. And when they built the subdivision in 1961, they put a storm drain in my neighbor's yard, not one in ours. So we connected to it, and that helped out tremendously. But we need to pause for a moment. We have Bobby Miles, owner of The Basement Doctor, with us in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, going to continue our conversation about how to get a nice, comfy, dry basement. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Bobby Miles, owner of The Basement Doctor, in with us, learning an awful lot about some basement issues and how to get those corrected. You can call The Basement Doctor at 513-554-0555. Go to them online, basementdoctorsensi.com or basementdoctorkentucky.com. Bobby, thanks for coming in and helping us out and understanding a lot of this.
Most definitely. I was just asking some questions during the break about we were talking about various ways to support or get a foundation back into its original form, and there's a couple of different piering options. One is the push pier, and the other one was the helical pier. And I'm like, well, what's what? You know, give us a little bit of explanation about that, because that was very interesting.
Well, a push pier is exactly, you know, the way it sounds. It's pushed into the ground using a hydraulic ram, and you push that to load-bearing strata where you can support the house. Mm-hmm. And a helical pier is like a corkscrew, and that's put in independent of the house. So that's put in with an excavator that's got a drive head on it that's also put in with hydraulics.
That's very interesting, and I guess my example was what I always notice and see, because it's the same process but at a larger scale, are the helical piers that are in part of the structure there on the hillside of Mount Adams.
Yeah, so those are tieback anchors,
yeah.
Right? So at some point in time, that wall was starting to move or starting to shift because all, you know, ground
Got
moves
it.
Downwards.
Right. Exactly.
So they go in and put those tieback anchors in and plate that, and that holds that wall.
Well, that explains that to me. That was, yeah, because I've always noticed that. And I'm like, how far back into the hillside does that go? But that makes sense. So thanks for the explanation.
Yeah,
you know,
no problem.
That sums it up for me. That kind of gives me a clear idea what that's all about. You know, I also noticed, too, that you work a lot with homeowners who perhaps, you know, a lot of people out there don't have basements. They have crawl spaces. And we lose a lot of energy, heat, you know, cold, you know, whatever. Tell us a little bit about that. Yeah, what does your company do with crawl spaces?
That's not something I would have thought about being an issue, a crawl space.
Well, you know, got stuck in one. That's an issue.
No, I got stuck in a wall going into the cookie room.
Well, you know,
that's another story.
A crawl space is, you know, one of those things that's out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. So, you know, people really don't go in the crawl spaces unless they're having somebody install TV or cable or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the person comes out and says, you know, you got a foot of water in your crawl space. Well, that's not good. Any kind of moisture in a crawl space isn't good because, you know, your wood floors, all of that
right
there.
Right.
So what happens is normally it starts to rot, starts to decay. Too much moisture in there. So the first thing that we do is we go in and we waterproof it. Make sure that we don't have any water in it.
Okay.
And then we encapsulate it. So it's a 20 mil liner that seals off to the walls, almost mm-hmm. like a diaper underneath mm-hmm. your house. And put a dehumidification system in it. So as long as you drop the relative humidity in a house or in a crawl space or in a basement below 50%, dust mites, molds, and allergens can't live there. So that's the ultimate. What you want to do is make your home healthy.
The dehumidification element, what does that entail? That's interesting. So you can put or install something of the sort in that crawl space area?
Yeah.
I guess you do it in basements, too.
So it's a dehumidifier.
Right.
We have them. Ours are like dehumidifiers on steroids, so they'll draw up to 90 pints of water a day
mm-hmm.
out of a crawl space or a basement.
Wow, that's a lot of water.
So is that? I guess that's a clue for homeowners if they're having to run a dehumidifier in their basement constantly or seems to be more often than you would think. Is that a clue that there's water problems in that basement somewhere?
Well, keep in mind, right, the basement is below grade,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's prone to moisture all the time. A crawl space is the exact same thing. It's below grade.
Gotcha.
So what happens is because it's concrete, water is always seeping through that concrete wall. The thing is that the evaporation rate in the basement, it evaporates into the air before you see it run down the wall.
No, and that makes a lot of sense. That's very interesting. You know, and I've used a dehumidifier before in my basement. And obviously, they will all collect water. There's no doubt about it. But I guess some more than others. And I just find that so interesting. So, yeah, because concrete's absorbent, so are block wall foundations. Which poses another question. Obviously, you work on the solid concrete wall foundations and block wall. Is there an advantage to either or of those? I mean, from your experience in the past?
No, not at all.
So they're just as good as one's just as good as the other.
Yeah.
But you also work on the block foundation walls too, right?
Absolutely.
What do you this is interesting. Some of the old homes were stone.
Yeah, and we work on a lot of those stone basements as well.
Are the block walls more problematic than anything?
That's what I was
one particular. I mean, I was thinking the same thing. As soon as you said block wall, that sort of lends itself for me to go, that baby's going
to
leak.
Well, he started to plead the fifth, I thought, when I asked him that.
Well, not only do they leak, but they bow, right? So what happens is because the block has hollow cores in it,
uh-huh.
okay, the water comes in from the outside, it gets in those cores, fills it up, okay,
right,
and then the hydrostatic pressure, the earth's pressure expanding, contracting of the soils, causes that wall to start to bow.
Okay.
Yep. So when we go in and we waterproof those block basements, we actually put 3/4-inch holes at the very bottom of the block, letting the water get out of
escape.
The block.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so you only have that much water in there, or could.
Oh, absolutely.
I would. You know, that's interesting. Yeah, so that would make sense. You know, those voids that are in the concrete block. Wow. I wouldn't have thought anything of the sort.
And what about stone walls? Are there stone wall crawl spaces that are issues too?
Yeah.
And basements.
It doesn't matter if it's a basement or a crawl space, right? It's stone, and it's not the stone that leaks, but it's the grout or the concrete that they put around the stone.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Bobby Miles from the Basement Doctor. And I've got a picture of him on our Facebook page. So jump on our Facebook page. If you have any questions, give us a call. And we also have their contact information up there as well. You can call the Basement Doctor at 513-554-0555 or go to basementdoctorcincy.com.
or basementdoctorkentucky.com. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Bobby Miles with us, owner of Basement Doctor. We've been solving a lot of problems and getting educated on some of the issues and how to correct that that basement problem. And really, that has got to be priority one for homeowners, to get that fixed and get the problems, A, for your health. But the great news, we were talking in the break, that all the estimates are free.
Absolutely.
And tell us a little bit, too, about your certified inspectors and everybody that comes into the home to work on your house.
Well, to run a good company, right, you have to be properly trained. So to be in sales, we train you. We go through all of that to make sure that, you know, our people know what they're looking at and what's going to solve their issues. So not only do that with ourselves, we do it with our installers too. Our foreman and his co-foreman, all of that have to go through, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of training before we ever put them in the field.
Great. And all of the people that come to the house are your employees?
Absolutely. Yep. We don't subcontract anything.
That's great news.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Is everyone that comes from the initial visit to the inspection to the work to the punch out or the finished product are all Basement Doctor employees? And all too often, homeowners will get in a situation where they hire someone to fix a problem in their home, and then someone different shows up, and then they bring a friend of theirs, and you just don't know about that. But that's not an issue with the Basement Doctor.
No, we get letters back all the time, you know, of people thanking us for doing exactly what we said we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
From start to finish, you know. We have a, you know, a wow factor in our company that we like to exceed our customers' expectations.
Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing to pop into my mind a few minutes ago when you and Tony were talking on the air about how everybody thinks that primarily the roof is the most important part of the house, but it's not. If you don't have a good foundation, a roof doesn't mean a hill of beans, you know.
Well, you know, if you don't have a foundation, you have a home, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's right. That's exactly right. So tell us a couple of things. Let's refresh a couple of things that we talked about earlier in your visit. What are the first things homeowners need to look for?
Well, there's lots of different things. You know, one, if you're walking around the outside of your house and you're seeing stair-step cracking in your brick or mm-hmm. your foundation, that's an immediate sign that you need to call, you know, to have it inspected, have it looked at.
Mm-hmm. So when, especially in the fall, we're always telling our listeners to get out and to walk around your property, to inspect your home and to take a look. What are some of the signs that they should be looking for?
Well, in a basement, you know, if you're starting to smell a musty odor or something like that, that's water infiltrusion into a basement.
Uh-huh.
Just because you don't have it 3 inches of water in your basement mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you're not getting water in your basement. So, you know, if you're starting to smell those musty odors, something like that,
yeah,
that's a good sign to call.
Mm-hmm.
Have someone come and look at it. There again, it's free, right? So it doesn't cost you anything but your time to have us come out, let us know what the problem is or what kind of problems you're having, and let us give you a solution to fix it.
What's an inspector going to do when he arrives at the house?
Well, we inspect inside and outside, mm-hmm. right? So not only do we go and look at the basement or the crawl space, but we go outside. So we want to look for downspout lines. We want to make sure downspouts aren't just dropping beside the house. Those need to be away from the house, you know, a minimum of 10 feet. You know, that's one thing.
So you can, I don't mean to interrupt you there, but image just popped into my mind. You can see somebody who's got a downspout and they run up to the big box and put a 90 on it and think, oh, I'm done. And all they're doing is creating a problem bigger than they need.
Well, you know what?
That's what
they did to my house when I bought my house. Exactly what you said. Downspout comes down, they put a 90 on it. Oh, it's good.
Hey,
it's done.
Let's go, Bill. We're finished.
Or what about that fancy one that fills up and rolls out and comes back, I guess, after it quits raining? You ever seen those?
Yeah, flexible. I've never seen any of them work.
Yeah, exactly right. They never work.
No, that's a fact.
They look better on the shelf.
Yep. So there's a minimum
there.
So what do you recommend to homeowners? How far away? What's that minimum to get the water away from your home with the downspout?
I'd like to go, you know, 7 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
Yep. That's good news.
Well, because, you know, when they put your basement in, They excavated around it, you know, 4 to 5 feet out. So that's not virgin soil anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's where the water will go to the most is right there. So if you've got them just dumping right beside your house, where's all that water going?
It's going right down to the footing. Yeah. That's interesting.
You know, if you found yourself or your staff in situations where somebody might say, hey, come on out here and take a look at this, and you send a crew out, and, you know, you evaluate the situation, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, they put it off. So those situations, when they put it off, it's not
again,
going...
what do we say, right? It only leaks when it rains.
Right. It's not going away. So, and it only festers and becomes more of a problem. And then even, you know, worse, more of a cost associated with the correction.
Yeah, it's not going to go away. We know that. You know that. So, you know, it's going to happen again. It's going to keep happening again, and it's going to get worse. And that's what you don't want to do. There's a point of no return, like in a structural repair issue, when you have to underpin a house or fix a bowed wall or something like that. If you let it go too long, there is a point of no return. Well, all you can do is just stabilize it and make sure that it doesn't move any farther. You know, on a bowing wall or a bulging wall, you know, you may wake up, we may get a lot of rain, and you may wake up in the middle of the night, we hear a big boom. That's the wall collapse again. You know, we've had that happen. We've had people that said, you know what, I'm going to hold off for now. And then 2 or 3 months later, they call us back to come back out there, and the whole wall's caved in. We can't do anything at that point.
Wow. No.
So your fix just went from, you know, a small amount of money to a huge amount of money.
Right.
And insurance companies don't pay for that.
They don't pay for that. You're absolutely right. That was my next statement. You know, when you run into those situations, and now it doesn't seem like when it rains, it's like what it used to be. It's all or nothing. It's 2 inches in an hour or what have you. Then all of a sudden, that hydrostatic pressure, it's there, and it's a problem.
Yeah, you have to, you know, think about something. If because of the clay soils that we have are so expansive, if it can raise a house up, right?
Yeah.
Then when it's dry, you can only imagine what's going to happen when it's going to sink, right?
Yeah.
So keeping those soils hydrated when it's really, really dry is a huge plus, especially in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky.
Right. Because
we have a lot of clay. There's no doubt about it.
That we do. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Bobby Miles from the Basement Doctor in with us. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. And a couple of things you need to make sure that you check out before we get too deep into the season. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Bobby Miles in with us, owner of the Basement Doctor. Don't forget, jump onto our Facebook page. We have all of his contact information there, and give them a call. Even if you think you might have an issue, it's better to call. Estimates are free, and all the employees or all the people that come to your house to work are employees of the Basement Doctor, no subcontractors.
And that's good to know, because all of a sudden, they're not blaming someone else.
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't us. That was done incorrectly.
Exactly.
Yeah. All you, yada, yada, yada. You start getting all that stuff. You know, you brought up something else while we were in the break. Those who, family members that have asthma or are starting to have some asthma issues, it's not always related to maybe allergens and things like that. That might be an indicator that there's something going on. Tell us a little bit about that. You know, just don't assume that.
Well, we see that a lot with customers that have crawl spaces, right? Because they're, like we said before, it's out of sight, out of mind. So they don't know that there's water sitting down there. And they don't, you know. So what happens with that is people start getting, you know, where it's hard to breathe, or they're smelling, you know, a weird smell or an odor. You know, that stuff needs to be addressed. There again, you could have us out. It doesn't cost you anything, right? We'll assess the issue. If you don't have a problem, we'll just basically tell you you're in good shape.
And nothing. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah.
That's music to your ears. But, you know, I can't say this enough. Whenever you suspect that there's a problem and you think that there probably is. And it's always worth, you know, having somebody, a professional, take a look at it, give you their opinion. And, you know, I say this often, too, and you probably tell a lot of homeowners when you give the free estimates and your assessment, you know, get another one.
Absolutely.
You know, you should always get a couple opinions and assessments, and then make an informed decision and make the right decision.
Yeah, what you don't want to do is be high, you know, have someone high pressure you into signing a contract or doing something. And there's a lot of that that goes on out there, right? So, you know, we like to, you know, take the customer shopping. It's their house, right? Yep. We have multiple products to do lots of different things to, you know, our customers' homes. But let them make their own decision.
Right.
Right? There's no high pressure, you know. That's what you don't want to do. You don't want to sign a contract with a high-pressure company.
No. And, you know, there's a whole other element here, too, that comes into play. A lot of us, if we are moving or what have you, and we put our home up for sale, and there are some structural issues, or and it's usually it's wet basements, people wig out about that. And then all of a sudden, it's like, I want some sort of a warranty, or you need to fix these before you make that sale to me.
Well, you know, it's a good thing that you bring that up, because remember, a warranty is only as good as the person backing the warranty, okay? Yeah. In this industry, every year you see it. You see these new people coming in, you know, and then they go out. Well, a lifetime guarantee of the structure is only as good as the company backing it, okay? So it's good to be with the company that's had longevity. It's going to be around to back that warranty should ever you need it, and have a lifetime guarantee transferable for the life of the structure of the home. So in other words, if I was to waterproof your basement, then you would have a lifetime guarantee of the structure of that home transferable for the life of the structure, that you would never have water in that basement again.
You know, that's like that's insurance in itself. That would make me feel very good about what it is that I've done. And if I sell the home, the person moving in, they have a warranty there.
Yeah.
And not many companies do that, and that's awesome. So what is your warranty? If I had you out to my house, or a homeowner has you out to their house, and you do whatever repair work that's necessary, what is your policy? What is your warranty?
The waterproofing warranty is a lifetime guarantee of the structure of the home.
Perfect.
Okay, so as long as that house is standing, it's guaranteed not to have water in that basement again. If you do, you call us. We fix it free. So it's no problem. Foundation repair is the same way. A lifetime guarantee. Once we underpin that, it will never move again. Okay? As far as poly level, the expandable foam, it's 7 years.
7 years.
A crack repair, crack in the wall that we fix with our patented FlexiSpan, lifetime guarantee as well. Life of the structure, transferable for the life of the structure.
You know that Flexi product that you're talking about, because, you know, our homes move. So is that the concept behind that? So that crack, the expansion and contraction, it moves with it, holds tight?
Yeah, so a lot of people will do injections, is what they call an injection. It's a polyurethane resin that they inject. Because exactly what you said, expanding, contracting of the soils, our houses are always moving, then the FlexiSpan, that's why with a crack injection, you get 3 to 5 years warranty. With the FlexiSpan, our product, you have a lifetime guarantee. And what it does is exactly what you said. In the event of expanding, contracting, it will take that water and wick it underneath the floor of the basement. Therefore, you never have water on the floor again.
That's a good feeling to have and know that you have behind you. That's for sure. Yep. You know, and you guys are at the is it the Kitchen and Bath Show this weekend?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that. Is that at the Cincinnati Convention Center?
Yep, it's going on this weekend. Started last night, ends Sunday. It's the Kitchen and Bath Show at the Cincinnati Cincinnati Convention Center. If you stop by the booth, we are offering a 15% off show special.
Oh, great.
Appreciate that. Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Bobby Miles, owner of The Basement Doctor, thank you so much for coming in and visiting with us. Happy to have you come back.
Thank you for having
still
me.
Still a lot of information that we can share, but visit them at www.basementdoctorcincy.com or basementdoctorkentucky.com. Call them in Ohio, 513-554-0555, or in Kentucky, 859-543-0709. Thanks again.
Thank you.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.